often say that there are two types of people in the world, those who have done frontline customer service and those that haven't. If you want to see the difference between the two, go out for brunch on Mother's Day. It will quickly become obvious to you which of your fellow diners have done their time in the customer service trenches. Now, aside from understanding in the very marrow of your bones how much harder service workers actually work than your average CEO, and I've been both, it's 100% true, I'll die on that hill. There is something important you learn as a frontline worker, something that can make a huge difference to you as a business owner. It's the actual functional delivery of the company's brand. Servers, to use the example I'm most familiar with, tend to have a better understanding of how a brand is actually perceived by the real buying public than anyone in the C-suite. Now, this of course can be for good or ill, depending on how well customer service is managed and how well integrated their feedback, if it's sought at all, is in the managerial and marketing processes of the business. That integration is all about taking the intangible, the feelings, the impressions, the offhand comments that you hear, and codifying it into a real part of the brand that can be used in all outward-facing communications, your website, your emails, and of course, on your podcast. This is The Company Show, a podcast for when podcasting is just part of the job. I'm your host, Megan Doherty, the co-founder of One Stone Creative and podcastingforbusiness.com, and I'm talking to podcasters, experts, business owners, and marketers about creating a show that is efficient, effective, and profitable. Today, I'm speaking with Brigida Wachowski, the creator of Bridget Brands, who's a company and personal brand identity strategist with over 23 years of experience in teaching global marketing management and branding at universities worldwide. Brigitte and I are talking about what differentiates a company brand from a personal one, when you should use each, and how they relate to each other, as well as the importance of storytelling in all of your branding activities, including your podcast, and of course, because it's The Company Show, how to measure the impact that you're creating with it. Here's the conversation. I think you're going to love it. Brigitte, thank you so much for joining me and all of us here today on The Company Show.
Thank you so much, Megan, for having me today. I'm excited being here and talk about brands, branding, and everything branding.
Amazing. Well, right as we get into that, can you tell us a little bit about your business and how you found this passion for the work that you do?
I'm a company and personal brand identity strategist, the founder of Bridget Brands. That's the name of my company, and I'm based in Austria, and I work globally. And my mission is to empower organizations, small, medium enterprises, but also corporations and entrepreneurs, those who are embarking, like corporates who are embarking on their entrepreneurial journey, or newly minted entrepreneurs. I help them who struggle with their branding strategies. I help them to transform their passion and desires and ambitions, to transform them into irresistible, captivating brands that shine with authenticity and with brilliance. And that's what I'm doing. And I started out as a flight attendant, where I was taught this passion for excellence. So there is this passion coming for brand excellence, right? So I started out as a flight attendant, and I flew for around 5-6 years. And I traveled throughout the world. I got to know many cultures, mentalities. I was on 5 different continents in a month. It was just great. I was flying mostly long haul. So it was a real great experience also to learn how to host people on board in business class, first class. So this was something that was really interesting and exciting, and to really immerse with the customer, because you really need to read from their eyes what they want. You're already anticipating, you learn to host. And I think this is something that you need as a coach. You need to read people, or need to at least anticipate what's going on, because you need to know where they are, so you can guide them from where they are to the goals that they want to achieve.
I think that that's such an interesting point, and especially about working with customers at that frontline level. And I think there's like two kinds of people in the world. It's people who have done that kind of frontline work with customers, and people who haven't. And the people who have always have so much more insight into branding and marketing and company culture, because they know, they've seen it in action in a way that someone who's never done that kind of work just doesn't.
Yeah, you are very close. You are the closest to the customer than anyone else. It's the flight attendant on the plane. It's the barista, it's the waitress in a restaurant. It's everywhere where you do service to your customer and you as a person are involved, as you say, frontline. And you learn so much. And for me, it was like when I flew across the globe, I was exposed to so many different cultures. That was also one takeaway as a teaching professor later on, teaching on a global level. Because I knew how to approach a Japanese person, a person from India, a person from Thailand, a person from Mexico, South America, different countries in Africa, from Northern America. So everyone has its unique mentality, culture, and way of doing things. So you need to get this understanding, this cross-cultural understanding. And that's where I got it from. Anyway, I stopped flying I was around 25. I couldn't have done it anyway much longer until 32 at the beginning, because then the contract terminated. We were getting too old. So it was like 30 years ago. That was the case when you flew for an airline, right? So I thought I need to have a second plan, a backup plan. And so I stopped and jumped ship and started studying. I was a student, so kind of, you know, very fresh, going to university, what's going on there? So I studied business education. I'm a certified teacher and also international marketing and management. And that's where my core is, basically. So I combined both. And so I got the tools, the techniques, the skills of, first of all, becoming a coach, being a teacher, being a guide, but also the knowledge of international marketing and management and branding. So I really studied it. It was not just one course, I studied it. So I also did my PhD at the end of the day in international marketing and management. I taught for 23 years at university in that area, global consumer behavior, global brand management, and everything concerning brands and branding and strategy and consumers and marketing. But I also was in corporate. So everything is coming together like a puzzle. And then I decided, now let's become an entrepreneur. I mean, it was not just one point in time decision, so now I'm switching. There was a lot going on for me, also molding myself into traditions that my unique self was not really aligned with. I was always this person who was looking for freedom and deciding on my own and by myself what I want to do and when I want to do it and with whom I want to work, you know? So because I was very often put into a box and I had difficulties to breathe because I was like, I cannot live my true authenticity. I cannot do it my way. So I had to switch. It's like, you know, a lever that you switch from one side to the next, from one extreme to the other extreme. So finding my balance. And it's the most liberating thing I've ever done, starting my entrepreneurial journey in the area of branding, of developing strategies for people and organizations, but more so creating these brand identities, because that's what it is all about, and educating the market about what this really is, because it's not just a logo or a color or a name. There is so much more, because it's all about what kind of meaning, what do you want to communicate, what do you stand for as a brand, and what should, last of all, people feel about you when they interact with you, when they talk about you, when they think of you. It's not just what people talk about you when you're not in the room, you know what I mean? It's really about the feeling that they have.
I think it's so interesting how you've got these threads that have been kind of through lines throughout your career, and it's really making me think. I remember back when I was young, one of my first jobs was working at a fast food restaurant, and I remember being so frustrated with how things were managed. And I was so frustrated, I started keeping a notebook of everything that I would do differently when I was in charge. And really, that carried through the rest of like high school into college, the little college I did, and then into starting to, you know, work for startups and running my own companies. It, like those initial values that you kind of formulate when you're a young person really often can carry you through for the rest of your career. It's very interesting how that happens.
Absolutely. I totally agree with that. And I was also the one, I don't like this. You can, you know, everything. I'm coming from a design perspective. I'm also a design thinker or design thinking facilitator. So how can I improve? How can I make this even better than it is? Because everything can be improved. There's always room for improvement. Nothing is perfect. And we should not drive for perfection, which is different to excellence, because excellence means you're giving your best every day.
Oh, what an excellent differentiation.
Exactly. And I also, I remember I was the one who was writing the workbooks and summarizing different books for a course, because I always needed structure. If there was something like floating in the air and it's intangible, I am the person who makes intangibility tangible. So for me, it was like, I need to bring this together and make something out of it so that other people can use that as a facilitating device to make sense of things. Yeah. So for me, that's like also when we talk about visual branding, like logo and everything, I take the intangible, what people feel, what you want people feel about you as a brand, and put it into the visual elements that make an identity.
Let's start digging into that a little bit, because you know, a lot of people listening to this, they run companies, they've got a brand, and it's usually something they've worked with a designer, they've worked with a consultant, and they've got a good company brand. They've got that logo, they've got the website, they've got cohesiveness. But I know one of the things that you're really passionate about is the idea of a personal brand. And so I'd love if you could just speak for a minute or two about the difference between a personal brand and a company brand, and where they should intersect and where they should be different.
For me, branding starts with mindset. And it's nice to have a logo and everything in place. That's where a lot of people start out. But you need to give meaning to it. What does it really mean? There needs to be a story to everything. And especially as a solopreneur, when you start out with whatever that is, and you are the person who is actually producing that service, then you as a personal brand is at the forefront. You need to know who you are. You need to be in the mindset of a business owner first, with a vision, mission, and values, and also understanding what your limiting beliefs are to really come to shine as a person, to actually give yourself the permission to do that, because a lot of people are holding back. So that's a crucial thing. And then personal branding is all about who you are as a person and what your strengths are, and what you as a person want to become. And this is going to be part of your business brand. So there is this difference between business and personal brand, and the difference, two different entities basically, but they come together. So they are interconnected, where the essence of one of these brands deeply influences the other. And building a personal brand identity takes precedence for an entrepreneur, because it serves the foundation and shapes the identity of the business brand. So the personal brand acts as a guiding force. It's influencing every decision and communication that is associated with the business brand. So there is this intentional alignment, yeah, that assures that values, ethos, and the passion of the individual entrepreneur are authentically reflected in the business brand, in the business brand's identity, yeah? Because the narrative of the company or business brand, however you want to call it, often extends from the entrepreneur's personal journey. It's their experiences, their aspirations. And it's not just embodying the professional endeavors or ventures, but the essence of the individual. It's like, for me, my personal journey. Yeah, what happened to me as a child? What happened to me in my first employments? It's just something, there is very often pain coming along with it that you as an entrepreneur then transform into your purpose. So that's why personal journey is so important.
What would you say to someone who has, say, invested a lot in a company or a corporate brand, But they've never really done any work around personal branding. And so now they've got a company brand that exists and it's one thing, but they haven't done that work for kind of their own personal brand. I may or may not be talking about myself here. So
yeah,
I'd love your thoughts on that.
The question here now is, how successful is the business? Because there's a lot of people that intuitively are doing the right things. The other people are just lucky to be...
I love to hear that.
They're lucky at the beginning, but the question is it sustainable? And only something that has meaning and has purpose is sustainable. So how do you as a person relate to your business? How does that go into your business? And I don't know, when you talk about company, yeah, is it like a one-woman show, one-man show? Is it like a micro company? Is it a small, medium enterprise? But a company needs to also, like an individual, embrace a vision that everyone is living by and striving for, has mission statement in place. How are we going to achieve our vision? And what are the values that we live by and breathe every day so that the company is healthy? Only a healthy company can strive and shine to the outside. So, and the leader is usually the head of the company. Yeah. And the leader's objective is to get the greatness out of people. That's the leader. And to not only walk in front, but supports his employees, managers, other leaders to excel. Only a leader who is reflected can also lead others, because you need to first lead yourself and then you can lead others. Isn't that? It's like you need to love yourself in order to love others.
I like the idea very much of looking at kind of developing the personal brand and starting to communicate the personal brand like a reflective activity. And rather than trying to create something that may or may not feel really, authentic, it is really a reflection of what is true and what is real and how are we communicating that. I think that's a really important shift, especially for people like me who are a little like brand shy, who don't love the words personal brand. That's a really interesting shift in perspective.
Exactly. It's who am I at my core? What makes truly me? So it's excavating. There's a lot of layers, a lot of conditioning that is upon us. But that was with me. I was just always operating from, they want me to do this, they want me to be that, they want me to play small, I have to fit in here, I have to fit in there. Hey, listen, what about me? Yeah, it's what about me? Because only when you are happy and you can live the life you want, and I think there's always a way to live a life you want, even though you're going through hard times, believe me, I'm going through hard times. I was going through, okay, I have not much money left, but I somehow make it happen. There's always a way that you can make it through, always. And it's the question of what you want to see at the end of the day. Yeah? Do you want to live a life and take on an identity that others tell you how you have to be? It's hard.
Let's jump a little bit into now kind of the podcast-specific elements of branding, because you know, when you're starting a podcast, that's one of the first things that you've got to do after you decide, like, when we should have a podcast. Okay, how often are we going to release the basic details? Then it comes down to how should it look? How should it sound? And really importantly, how should it integrate with different brand elements that already exist within the company? Because there are like the personal, like the host branding, and that may or may not be the leader of the company. And then there is the company branding itself. So how should someone go about making these decisions when they're getting started with a company podcast?
Yeah. Various factors that you need to consider here. It's what's your podcast's purpose? Who is my target audience?
Great question. Love that.
Who are my overarching goals? And the podcast primarily serves as a platform when it comes to businesses or corporations to represent them, right? So it's generally really advisable to prioritize the company or the corporation, the corporate brand, as the dominant identity. So if it's for corporations, because you need to be consistent and align it with the broader brand strategy of the organization or of the company. Yeah? It's an extension of the organization's communications efforts. Think about We call it the integrated marketing communications. It's now 360 degrees. We have no silos. This is, you know, radio, and this is a broadcasting, and, you know, narrowcasting. This is big on time. Now we have it all together. It is kind of, there is a multiplier effect. Then you need to figure out, where do I post this? Where do I have that played? And what kind of social media platform do I use here? And you see that there is an integration of different channels also. Yeah. So you need to align your podcast closely to your company or corporate brand. So it becomes one channel, element, or vehicle to communicate your ideas, right?
Oh, I love that. Oh, that's such a great question to be asking at the beginning, is what is the purpose of the podcast? And in what ways is it engaging with the audience, and particularly the clients of the company? What information and what communication do they need from the podcast to make that message really come through clearly? So I think that that's so good as a starting point.
Yeah, and as for a corporation, it's amplifying your credibility and authority within a niche, within an industry. You solidify your position as a thought leader, for example. But also, don't underestimate to incorporate elements of personal branding, because it's humanizing your corporate brand. And therefore, it also fosters stronger connections with your audience. There might be the CEO, there might be a certain person with certain functions in the organization to highlight that with these personal stories, but also maybe the person who does the podcast for the company. He is the podcaster. He also, and that's why this values alignment is so important. He represents the company, his voice, his tone of voice, the way, you know, everything, the stories that he tells. So he's becoming part of the whole game, but he's not the dominant brand identity in that case.
I think that's a good thing to bring up, because what we see all the time, and it happens every time, and it can be the most beautifully crafted, designed podcast in the world, completely aligned with every company. They could be talking to other experts in the field, wonderful interviews, wonderful conversations. But as soon as there's a solo episode with just the host, that's going to perform better than anything else ever has, because people love that individual connection, whether or not it's a kind of company podcast, or whether or not the host is the owner of the company or a team member. It's always about the host.
Exactly, because it's about their authenticity. It's about when they tell stories, there's vulnerability involved. That's how you connect with the hearts of your listeners. It's storytelling. Podcasting is storytelling. But I think it's beautiful if companies use that, because companies also can tell stories and here connect with their people within the organization. It's with the people, for example, at the front. Invite someone as, I don't know, I'm just coming up with an idea, Starbucks and the baristas. What are they experiencing in China, yeah, in Shanghai, or what are they experiencing in Southern California and Redondo Beach? Yeah, what is the difference here? Yeah? But it's still Starbucks.
Yeah, really, really interesting. And I think that that's also, it could be a really good strategy in and of itself, especially if you have like a larger global organization, having different hosts or different podcast iterations for the different areas that you live in would probably be really interesting to anyone who's interested in Starbucks at all. I think that's a really cool strategy.
Absolutely. And telling stories, anonymous stories, but that's how we connect. People want to listen to stories. And I know that when I was a kid, I loved when I went to bed and my parents read me a story. And listening to, at that time, we only had radio, and so many years ago, there was not much out there, but I was always excited to listen to stories. And that's why I also have my podcast, and you're also my distinguished guest. And I just love to listen to other people's stories and learn from that.
Oh, I love it. Well, since we're talking about stories, actually, this is something, so, you know, everyone who's listening to this, no one has been living under a rock. So we all know everyone is trying to use generative AI and large language models to do absolutely everything, including doing a lot of the work around, say, creating scripts for podcasts, even doing the editing. Don't get me started on that. So as someone who's a branding expert, there is a concern, because AI has a voice and it's very starting to become more easy to identify. So how do you think people should be navigating this when they are looking at balancing, you know, being more efficient with still making that human connection and communicating the brand? Just what do you think about it?
Since I'm a brand identity strategist, I'm in branding, but I'm also a podcaster and also a kind of a teacher. And usually I get the latest news via the Harvard educators, because I'm participating in different workshops there also when it comes to AI and teaching cases and all that. So it's all integrated now. We are learning differently. We have all this vast amount of information, but what do we do with it, and how do we judge whether an information is accurate or not? And that is very much true when it comes to AI. I personally think that AI is working in lightning speed. ChatGPT is something that you use in order to make things faster, to get a writer's block out of the way, and all the things, you know, for idea generation and analyzing a vast amount of information. But you need to be the expert. I would never use this tool for research, because I do research another way. I know what are A-ranked journals, what is a renowned source, because I check it out. I'm a curious person. And, oh my God, I would never go out with
that. It
lies.
It doesn't understand what a lie is.
It doesn't know. It only understands prompts. And it's an instrument. When you play an instrument, you are the one who is giving the prompt and doing it. The instrument is just producing what you order it to do. So you need to be very specific with your prompts. And then when you are getting the output, you need to be an expert to understand what is true and what is not true, and in given circumstance, also check back with other sources. So you have a responsibility using that. It's not all the AI did produce whatever that is, mediocre output. It's about you, what you feed it with.
Yeah, and this is something I've found so often when trying to use AI. Like often, like as you say, it can be really great for kind of getting past like blank page paralysis, you know, as a kickoff for ideas, can be great. But when it comes down to like, there's a lot of AI show notes writers, and it takes as much time to sit down and make sure everything it said was actually true, like it actually reflects the reality of the world, as it does to just write it from scratch. Like I find, like, it really doesn't save me, at least personally, much time.
Yeah. If you feed it can come up with a lot of interesting ideas or a better formulation, especially when it's not your native language, you're doing something in another language. It helps a lot. It has no emotions. When it comes to branding now, you need to add the emotions and the soul, you as a person. You give it the human touch. It creates an output, it might be great, but anyone could have been writing that, right? But you need to reformulate it in a way that it speaks your heart. It's in your tone of voice. That is the importance. So the combination, the marriage of both, is excellent. Yeah? But you need to know how to work with it.
And that really highlights for me something that you were saying earlier, and the importance of having kind of an understanding throughout an entire organization of any size, how important it is to have clarity on what the values are, what the brand voice is, what needs to be communicated. Because if you've got, say, an intern who's using AI and they don't have that understanding, they're not going to be able to make the judgment about whether or not it fits in like with the podcast or with the blog. They need to have that understanding of what is right for them to be able to use the tool correctly.
Yeah, exactly. So when it comes to branding and putting that now on a holistic level, when you have someone, an intern, it's like onboarding. For the onboarding, you already need to know, does this person fit? So here you already need the value set this person brings along. Is this a fit, a complementary fit to our culture? Can this person, you know, really live and breathe us of who we are and what we want to represent? And then you need to take the time to teach that person. And so really that the person inhales this values or can also really integrate it into his personal values or personal value set. And when this is possible, then you have someone working for you who really does a good job. So brand identity comes in all the different forms, and if you give such, actually, it's a very responsible work or task, yeah, to create such posts or such copywriting, because you're putting something out there that reflects the soul and everything that the brand is and stands for, and you're communicating that. And that is you. We need to discern that. You need to be aware of that.
So you're making an excellent case for robust branding work within an organization.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing. So,
yeah. So this is the company show, and Once No Credit, our entire business, we are metrics people. We love metrics.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah,
when you're doing work
yeah.
with companies and organizations, what are some signs or some numbers or some indicators that your brand is being really effective? What do you look for to tell you this is going well? And on the other hand, what could tell you we need to do some work here?
Yeah, I mean, in general, when it comes to personal branding, to really measure something like that, you indirectly measure. Yeah, so you need to think about, first of all, kind of a sentiment analysis, for example, yeah, around your brand, who is mentioning you, and getting an idea of, you know, what are people talking about you, getting feedback from others, like you really go out there, ask them qualitatively, ask 30 people, 40 people, as many as you can, in three words, how they would describe you as this or that. Yeah. And then, of course, Google Analytics. Yeah. When we go hard numbers, monitoring your website traffic, referral sources, demographics, geographics, when you're global and you have a global podcast, where is this coming from? Right. Then also social media analytics, tracking like LinkedIn likes, comments, messaging. But, you know, it gives you only a rough indicator. It's an approximation. Because what I have realized, maybe it has something to do also with cultural differences, because maybe in the US not so much, because they really want to express how they feel about you. But I have experienced in Europe, it's a little different. Yeah, you're so
Canada's more like Europe in that regard.
Yeah, and it's like, wow, you're all over the place on LinkedIn and your content is amazing. I have never received a like, you know, from these kind of persons. So you never know how many people really like what you do, appreciate you, would refer you, even though you have never seen any conversion or any like or something like this. So we should not underestimate that.
That is so fascinating. I didn't know the extent of that difference in terms of like online engagement. That's really fascinating.
Yeah. So a like does not really mean a like. So what is, there was a Harvard article, I think it was in 2017. It's already old in that case, yeah, in our social media time, how we measure time, right? But
yeah,
what is really behind a like? What is it? You don't know what's the motive behind. So it's really hard to measure. So we should think about that as well.
Now I'm thinking about my own behavior. And when I like something, what I'm usually saying is, you're a person that I know and I support you in what you're doing. Here's my little thumbs up. Like, here's my little, I think you're great. I guess that's usually what I'm thinking when I'm liking on something.
Yeah. So just reflect on your own behavior. That doesn't mean others behave the same way. So you really need to get feedback, honest feedback, constructive feedback from others. So I think qualitatively asking people one-on-one or through questionnaire would be a great thing to do. But, you know, there's other things like email subscriptions or newsletter subscriptions if you have an email list, yeah? What's the opening rate? What's the conversion rate via this link, et cetera? So this gives you also an indication, but also speaking engagements. You are invited to a show, a LinkedIn live, to a podcast, vice versa. So how many people approach you? I don't know how many you get. I have a podcast guest with you. Yeah, and partnership opportunities, business referrals. I think what really counts is a conversion into sales. At the end of the day.
You have no way of knowing this, but you have basically run down the list of how we attribute success and business outcomes to podcasting as well. So it's really interesting how many parallels there are before that. And so now we all have our homework.
Yeah.
We know what we're going to go start tracking. Thank you for that.
Yes, one more thing. Never work with a silver metric. And that means you always have several measures coming from different perspectives looking at one thing to make sense. I think that's the most critical advice.
And that's a fantastic one. And so good. So as we've all got our homework, I've got one last question for you before I ask you to tell everyone where they can find you and learn more from you.
Yeah.
Do you have any examples off the top of your head of, say, either a personal or company brand, bonus points if it has a podcast associated, that you think is just excellent? And you think this was done so well and so beautifully and it's doing such a good job. Who should we go study to learn from?
Okay. So there are three podcasts. So three favorite podcasts. The first one is Mel Robbins' podcast, because she is the testament to the power of authenticity and vulnerability and straightness, clarity, directness. She just captures people's hearts. I mean, not every episode is like, sometimes like, oh, this is really strong, yeah? But that's how she is. And she stays true to herself. And that's what I love about her. Two more. There is Jay Shetty. He just stands out for his blend of wisdom, empathy, and authenticity. He had a journey. He became a monk, then he was a consultant, and now he's running his own business. He's an influencer, and he shapes perspectives on life. So he's also someone who really touches people's hearts and is very authentic and has very thoughtful interviews, thought-provoking discussions. He's inspiring listeners. And then I also like Lewis House. He has this, the house of, what is this? It's the school of greatness. And he also embodies this essence of authenticity and vulnerability. It's about mindset. He goes into all the facets of life, from nutrition to health to wellness to having grace and grit to being unique. He has also a lot of authors in his shows. You learn so much from all these different kinds of people. So it's just beautiful to listen to this podcast. And I do it on my run, I do it in the fitness center, I do it when I go for a walk, and there's always advice. And interestingly, I listen to the right thing, what I'm starting to question in the morning is going to be answered in one way or another. It's just a beautiful synchronicity.
I love it. Well, so we will link to all of those in the show notes. So wherever you are listening to this, you can also learn and be inspired by these brands and this content and these changes in the world. Bridget, this has been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much. Where should people go to find you, and who should come find you?
Yeah, as I say, I create brand identities, whether it's personal brands, entrepreneur brands, or I help elevate executive presence. That's also where my heart is. People can get in touch with me via my website. It's bridgetbrands.com. Via LinkedIn, I'm busy on LinkedIn. My handle is Boykowski. I think it's also going to be in the show notes. I also have an Instagram account. I'm not really busy on Facebook. It's not my channel. I just go there privately, but I have a page, but I'm not really engaging anymore, because I feel there is not, my crowd is not there. But I also have a YouTube channel, because I also have this podcast. So you can tune in. It's about unraveling the secrets behind successful brands like you are.
Perfect. This has been absolutely wonderful. Thank you so much for being so generous with your knowledge and with your time. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much for having me. It was such a joy. And thank you for sharing my insights.
I love Brigitte's focus on really dialing into the purpose of your podcast. How are you specifically serving your audience and your business when making decisions about how you should be presenting your brand? Check out Brigitte's work and subscribe to her podcast, where I've been privileged to also be a guest, and take her entrepreneurial branding starter checklist. You will find the link in the show notes. So one of the many brand-associated elements of your podcast is, of course, your voice. Now, a lot of us feel anxiety about our voices, how we speak and how it sounds to others. And so there's a lot of content out there about controlling it and using it the way that you want to. But something that isn't considered quite as frequently, but that might be even more important, is protecting your voice and your vocal health in general. Now, this is not something that I had ever really considered seriously until I met Brianne Hennessy, who joined us for a strategy and networking call a couple of months ago. The call was so jam-packed with incredible information that we decided to release the episode here on the company show too. This was a talk filled with practical, detailed information about how you can protect your most powerful podcasting tool, your voice. Here's a quick preview.
If you look at your week and you're like, ooh, this is a tight week and I want to get these recordings in and I have these other events that I have to do, it may be a factor of just sprinkling in more voice rest time. Voice rest alone will not cut it because this voice, like an athlete, needs to be conditioned. So again, no athlete's going to be like, well, I really have to get ready for the next season, so I'll just rest. No. So these are the things you can do, though, sprinkling in little kind of voice naps between, if you're recording a lot, between episodes, if you are speaking with clients or potential clients or family, or, you know, again, in background noise, it's important to just notice, am I resting my voice at intervals? And am I making sure not to over project, even with the microphone right here, just because I feel like I need to be heard? So monitoring even just the voice volume can make a huge difference. Let the mic do the work for you. Your mic is there to support you.
I just love it. Treat your voice as respectfully and carefully as you would any other precious resource. So that's coming next week. Make sure you're subscribed to catch it. And if you like the show and what you hear on it, the best way to support us is to send this episode to a business owner you think should have a podcast. Thank you so much for being here. I'm Megan Doherty, and this episode of The Company Show was produced by the team at One Stone Creative. We'll be back next week with more ways to get more value out of your show.